History is a heavy burden to carry. In our Caribbean, we were told that the end of the empire would be the beginning of our breath. We looked to the men on the podiums. We looked to the orators who stood in the heat of the 1930s and promised that the sugarcane would no longer define our worth. These were our giants. They were the ones who faced the bayonets and the gallows so we could walk into the sun of independence. But something happens when a rebel moves into the big house. Something shifts when the person who broke the chains starts to enjoy the feel of the key. This is not a story of victory. It is a record of the gap between the promise and the paycheck. We are looking at the moment the liberation stopped being for the people and started being for the palace. This is the history of how our heroes became our ghosts. Chapter 1. The Weight of the Crown. The year was 1938. Across the islands, the heat was not just in the air. It was in the blood. In Jamaica, the docks at Kingston were a tinderbox. Men worked for pennies while the colonial administrators lived in cool hills behind gated walls. The sugar estates in Frome were burning. This was the birth of the modern Caribbean. We did not ask for a seat at the table. We demanded the table be broken. Into this fire stepped the first generation of our giants. They were men of the people. Alexander Bustamante stood before the police and bared his chest. He told them to shoot him and leave the people alone. It was a moment of pure, raw courage. It was the kind of moment that creates a myth. The people saw a savior. They saw someone who spoke their language and felt their hunger. This was the pattern across our region. In island after island, the labor leader became the chosen one. We gave them our devotion because they gave us our dignity. But the colonial system was a trap designed by experts. When independence finally came, the heroes did not inherit a clean slate. They inherited a machine built for extraction. They moved into the offices where the governors once sat. They looked at the same ledgers. They dealt with the same banks in London and New York. The transition from the street to the State House changed the frequency of their voices. The first sign of the rot was the Messiah complex. We made these men into gods, and they did not refuse the title. In those early days of sovereignty, the hero was the state. To disagree with the leader was to be a traitor to the nation. The unions that had broken the back of the colonial economy were now told to be quiet for the sake of development. The strikes that were once seen as holy acts of resistance were now viewed as threats to national security. The hero was no longer at the front of the march. He was behind a mahogany desk, protected by the very police force he once fought. We watched as the rhetoric of the revolution began to stiffen. The speeches grew longer, and the promises grew more distant. The we of the struggle became the I of the administration. There was a belief that because they had delivered us from the British, they owned our future. This was the original sin of our politics. We traded a distant monarch for a local one. The power did not decentralize. It simply changed its accent. The laws that were used to suppress the workers in 1938 remained on the books. Only now, they were being enforced by the men who had been in the jail cells themselves. The infrastructure of the islands began to show the strain. The money that was supposed to build schools and hospitals was often diverted to keep the party machinery running. Patronage became the new currency. If you wanted a job on the road crew, you had to wear the right color shirt. If you wanted your community to have running water, you had to vote for the hero. This was not the freedom we were promised in the hot sun of the riots. This was a new kind of plantation, and the overseer looked just like us. The tragedy was not that these men were evil. The tragedy was that they were tired, and they were human. They found that it was easier to rule by personality than by policy. They relied on the love of the masses to bypass the need for accountability. They told us to be patient. They told us that the colonial legacy was too deep to fix in a decade. And while we waited, they grew comfortable. They began to see themselves as indispensable. They believed that without them, the islands would drift back into the sea. By the time the 1960s drew to a close, the honeymoon was over. The young people who had grown up in the shadow of these giants were starting to ask questions. They looked at the poverty in the yards and the luxury in the hills. They saw that the faces in the parliament had changed, but the lives of the poor had stayed the same. The hero had become the establishment. The rebel had become the status quo. The stage was set for a new kind of fire, one that would not be satisfied with just a flag and an anthem. As the old guard clung to their titles, the ground beneath them began to move. The global economy was shifting. The certainties of the post-war era were vanishing. The heroes found that they could not eat prestige. They could not pay the bills with stories of the 1930s. The pressure was building in the streets once again. But this time, the police were taking orders from the men who used to lead the protests. The first era of our independence was ending, not with a bang of joy, but with a low, constant simmer of resentment. The crown was heavy, and it was starting to crush the head that wore it. But the biggest test was still to come. The world was splitting in two, and our islands were caught in the middle. The heroes had to choose a side, and in that choice, the dream of a unified people would finally shatter. Chapter 2: The Fracture of the Dream. The 1970s brought a new wind to our shores. It was a cold wind from the north, and a hot wind from the south. The idealism of the early independence years had turned into a hard, ideological struggle. This was the era of the isms. Socialism, capitalism, and the raw power of the Cold War began to tear our communities apart. We no longer fought for the right to work. We fought over which system would own our souls. In Jamaica, Michael Manley spoke of power for the people. In Grenada, Maurice Bishop talked of a new jewel. These were men of immense charisma. They spoke of a second independence. They told us the first one was just a dress rehearsal. But the price of this new vision was a deep, bloody division. The hero was no longer a symbol for everyone. The hero was now a partisan. In the tenement yards of Kingston, the politics of the 1970s became a matter of life and death. We saw the rise of the political garrison. These were neighborhoods turned into fortresses. If you lived in a certain block, you belonged to a certain leader. The heroes began to arm their supporters. They traded the ballot for the bullet. They used the desperation of the poor to create private armies. This was the ultimate betrayal of the 1938 spirit. The men who were supposed to lead us out of violence were now the ones providing the guns. The state was no longer a protector. It was a participant in a civil war that had no front lines. We watched as our brothers and sisters were killed over the color of a political scarf. And at the top, the leaders stayed safe. They stayed in their protected enclaves, spinning theories about the revolution, while the people bled in the gutters. In Grenada, the dream turned inward and ate itself. The New Jewel movement had come to power in 1979 with a promise of a new way. For a moment, it felt real. There were literacy programs. There were new health clinics. But the hero's shadow grew too long. Paranoia set in. The leadership began to suspect its own people. Then, it began to suspect itself. The movement fractured. In October 1983, the unthinkable happened. The revolution turned its guns on its own leader. Maurice Bishop was executed by his own comrades against a reinforced concrete wall. The silence that followed those shots was the sound of a generation's hope dying. If the heroes could not even trust each other, how could we trust them? The tragedy in Grenada provided the excuse for foreign intervention. The Americans moved in, and the dream of a Caribbean path, free from outside masters, was broken. We realized that our leaders had left the door open for the old powers to return. Their ego and their infighting had cost us our sovereignty. In Guyana, the situation was just as grim. Forbes Burnham had once been a light of the independence movement. But as the years passed, the light turned into a scorching heat. He took control of every aspect of life. He rigged elections with a brazenness that shocked the world. He turned the wealth of the country into a personal chest. The hero had become a dictator. The man who spoke of African liberation was now oppressing his own black and brown citizens. The breadlines grew longer. The dissenters disappeared. The fear was a thick physical presence in the streets of Georgetown. The disillusioned began to leave. This was the era of the Great Exodus. Our best minds, our hardest workers, and our most talented artists looked at the islands and saw a dead end. They saw leaders who cared more about their image in the history books than the hunger in the bellies of the children. They saw a region that was trading its future for the vanity of a few powerful men. The migration was a silent protest. It was a statement that the heroes had failed to build a home where people could actually live. By the time the 1980s were winding down, the landscape was scarred. The rhetoric of revolution had lost its flavor. It tasted like ashes. We had seen the messiahs, lead us into economic ruin and social chaos. We had seen them use the language of the poor to enrich the party elite. The gap between the man on the podium and the man in the mud was wider than it had ever been under the British. The heroes were aging, some were dying, others were being pushed out by the very systems of corruption they had helped create. But they left behind a culture of politics that was transactional and brutal. They had taught us that power was something to be seized and held at any cost. They had taught us that the law was a tool for the powerful, not a shield for the weak. As we looked at the ruins of the ideological wars, we had to ask, was this what the riots of 1938 were for? Was this the freedom we had prayed for? The pressure was no longer coming from a colonial governor. It was coming from the debt. The islands were drowning in loans they could never pay back. The heroes had spent the future, and now the bill was due. The next generation would not be fighting for a new ism. They would be fighting for survival, in a world that had moved on without them. Chapter 3. The Ghost in the Palace. We live now in the era of the ghost. The giants of the independence era are mostly gone, but their shadows still dictate the way we breathe. In the 21st century, the Caribbean is haunted by the structures the heroes left behind. We see it in the dynastic politics that plague our islands. The names in the parliament are the same names we heard 40 years ago. Power has become an inheritance. The sons and daughters of the liberators now walk the halls of power, not because of their vision, but because of their bloodline. The disillusionment is now a permanent state of being for the youth of the Caribbean. They do not look to the political stage for answers. They look to the exit. The brain drain has become a flood. When we lose our nurses, our teachers, and our engineers, we are losing the very foundation of a nation. They leave because they see a system that is rigged. They see a strongman legacy that rewards loyalty over merit. They see a political class that is more interested in the next election than the next generation. In many of our islands, the state has effectively retreated. Where the hero once promised to provide, the gang leader now steps in. In the voids left by government failure, new and more dangerous heroes have emerged. These are the men who provide the school books and the funeral money, but they do it with the proceeds of crime. This is the ultimate cost of the failure of our political giants. When the legitimate leaders lose the trust of the people look for protection wherever they can find it. The economy of the region has become a playground for external interests once again. We traded the sugar plantation for the tourism enclave and the offshore bank. Our leaders, the ones who talk so loudly about sovereignty, are the same ones who sell our land to the highest foreign bidder. They allow the destruction of our mangroves and the privatization of our beaches. They tell us it is for investment, but we know the pattern. The money stays at the top. The people get the crumbs and a low-paying job cleaning a hotel room they can never afford to stay in. We must ask ourselves the hard question. What did we actually win? We have the flag. We have the anthem. We have a seat at the United Nations. But do we have control over our own lives? The heroes taught us how to protest, but they didn't teach us how to build a system that could survive their own egos. They built cults of personality instead of institutions of justice. They made themselves the center of the story, and when they left, the story fell apart. There is a deep, quiet anger in the region today. It is the anger of a people who have been told for a century that better days are coming. We are tired of being told to wait. We are tired of the speeches that use the suffering of our ancestors to justify the corruption of today. The history of resistance has become a tool for the powerful to keep the restless quiet. They point to the statues of the past to distract us from the poverty of the present. But the ghosts are starting to lose their power. A new generation is looking at the history of the Caribbean with clear eyes. They are not interested in the myths. They are looking at the ledgers. They are demanding a new kind of leadership, one that doesn't need a pedestal. They want transparency. They want accountability. They want a future that isn't a recycled version of the past. The legacy of our heroes is a mixed and bloody bag. We cannot deny their courage in the early days. We cannot forget that they stood up when the world told them to sit down. But we also cannot ignore the damage they did when they refused to let go. They gave us the keys to the house, but they left the pipes leaking and the roof rotting. Now it is up to us to decide if we are going to keep living in a ruins, or if we are going to build something that actually belongs to us. The era of the Messiah is over. The era of the people must finally begin. If we don't learn from the failures of our giants, we are condemned to be dwarfed by them forever. The struggle for the Caribbean was never just about getting rid of the colonizer. It was about becoming a people who don't need a hero to tell them they are free. The sun is setting on the old guard. The question is, what will we do when the lights finally go out in the palace?